This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. And we're online too at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. Today, we're doing our Thanksgiving bonanza. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. And lots of things related to Thanksgiving, thankfulness, and then just also some fun things in relation to Thanksgiving. And one of the things people like to do during Thanksgiving sometimes is they like to have a little sporting contest, maybe with family and friends. Football is usually one of the games people like to play. I've done that several years. You've done that in the past, I suppose, got out and thrown around the old pigskin, as it were.
Oh, yeah. There used to be an annual, flag football game here on the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, and I would be playing when I was like 10 or 11. Mm-hmm. But one year I got clotheslined, like unconscious on the ground, and then I woke up and I went to the wrong huddle.
Wow.
So that was actually a pretty funny experience.
Nothing says Thanksgiving like a concussion. ESPN has a funny little write-up, 4 can't-miss plays to win your Thanksgiving football backyard matchup. And I just think it's funny the way they wrote some of these. This is one of their plays. It says, and they have them diagrammed too. It says, dial this up when you need to score at the goal line. This play creates a traffic jam to get a receiver open on the goal line. Aligned in a bunch formation, your best friend clears out on a corner route with your sister coming underneath on the crosser. This allows your cousin, the one with the real route running skills, to release outside and break back on the pivot. If the defense somehow makes it through the wash, the pivot should still be there. Gotta sell the release. As a last resort, you can always target your uncle on the backside corner route. Put it up high and let him climb the ladder to the finish. That sounds about what would happen at a family football game. You know, you got your sister out there, your uncle's running around. No one should be out there. There's probably one guy that can play a little bit.
It immediately sounded like an illegal pick play with the bunch formation. Yep. And just like plowing guys out of the way so that one of your receivers can get open. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've done that a few times during Thanksgiving, but normally the adults didn't participate, so I was out there with my brother and then a bunch of little kids, pretty much.
Yeah.
And one of them always like takes the ball and doesn't let go of it ever, and so we're all like trying to say, hey, you're slowing down the entire game. We can't throw you attached to the football, so you're gonna have to let go of it at some point.
It's always a lot of fun. Get out and do some of those and try to avoid injury. That's always one of the keys as well. Here's something that might be handy for you if you're one of the people that's involved in the making of Thanksgiving food. I'm not. I participate in the eating and the purchasing. And I let the experts do the cooking. What about you? Are you the same?
Exactly. That's how you have to do it. I think purchasing the food is a hefty contribution of itself, and so we shouldn't be expected to do everything else.
Nobody would want to eat it if I made it. This says top chefs serve up Thanksgiving do's and don'ts. So this is what the top chefs say, and I know people have different ways of doing things, so we'll just read what they say, and if you don't agree, then fair enough.
Then you're wrong.
Yeah. Ina Garten, host of Food Network's Barefoot Contessa, she says, one thing you should do is cook your stuffing separately from the turkey to avoid overcooking the bird. She says, don't deep fry your turkey. I know some people like to do that. But she says, nobody wants a trip to the hospital. It's dangerous. You're dealing with a huge cauldron of hot fat, and you're lowering this turkey into it. Just put it in the oven. So that might ruffle some feathers, no pun intended. Some people really like the deep fryer, and I think you do pretty well with it, but there can be accidents there too.
Yeah, it seems like more than half the people I've talked to about how they prepare the turkey actually deep fry it. So that's maybe just the people who talk about it have such a unique experience with deep frying it that they're the only ones I hear from. But it does seem like a pretty common practice.
Yeah, you just have to be careful. Know what you're doing. Bobby Flay, he's pretty famous. He says you should incorporate current events into your dinner.
He said you shouldn't or should?
He said you should.
Oh, okay.
He said, along with turkey, Flay will prepare a Puerto Rican-style roast to start a conversation about Hurricane Maria's aftermath. That's pretty. I don't know that I would draw the connection, you know, if I was eating something and someone said, you know, that dish is actually from Puerto Rico. But anyway, that's what he wants to do.
Some kind of a smooth transition,
I guess.
By the way, have you seen the destruction going on there? Yeah, it just seems like it would be a pretty dark turn all of a sudden to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that's an interesting take. He said, don't go with a canned cranberry sauce. If you can help it, Flay has to buy it for a cousin who loves it, but he leaves the sauce in the shape of a can so everybody knows where it came from.
That's rude.
That is. I don't know. Some people really like that stuff, but I guess it's probably not as healthy for you. April Bloomfield, she's a chef at the Spotted Pig. I don't know that I'd eat there, but some people do. She says, do make side dishes in advance to avoid last-minute scrambling. Prep what you can before the day so that you can spend time with the family. That sounds like a good idea. She said, don't drench sweet potatoes with marshmallows. It's adding sweet on top of sweet. I'd never have heard of that, but apparently people do that quite often.
I've seen it. I've never experienced it. It sounds kind of nice, but again, maybe that's another reason for a trip to the hospital. Not just getting burned by the tub of hot fat, but also eating too much sweetness.
Yeah, the cauldron of hot fat. You might become the cauldron of hot fat, depending on what recipes you're eating. And there's a few other ones that people mention here, but I think that gives give some ideas. You know, it's tough if you're hosting a dinner, if you're cooking, because a lot of people have sort of specific requirements, or there's things they don't prefer in terms of gluten. Some people don't like gluten and other things. So it's tough because you have all sorts of people with different tastes and sometimes dietary differences, and you got to try to have a good meal for everybody. So it's hard if you're in there cooking and preparing.
Yeah, it really is. It would be a lot simpler if we all just liked everything, or at least could stomach everything. But that's not a very common type of person. I mean, I when I was younger, my dad forced me to eat things. I'd be at the dinner table for like 3 hours if I didn't eat the chicken liver. And so to this point today, it's actually a really convenient thing. It doesn't matter what anyone makes. I could eat it just fine.
Even the canned cranberry sauce, still in the shape of the can.
No problem. Yeah. But I'm sure most people have not wasted that much time sitting at the dinner table doing nothing to be able to put everything down.
Yeah, well, and I imagine for like some of these very famous chefs, they're like reputations on the line, so they can't be right. Caught like with the canned item or something. Here's an interesting study from Berkeley in relation to gratitude in the United States. How do we say thanks? And the results so far of this study show that gratitude is very important to Americans, and that they actively feel grateful for what they have. But how often and in what circumstances do people actually say thanks? The results reveal more evidence for a phenomenon sometimes called the gratitude gap. Given how often they feel it and how important they think it is, Americans do not express gratitude very often. So everyone admits, yes, it's important. Yes, I like people to show me gratitude. Oh, yeah, I don't really show gratitude to people that often. That's the gratitude gap.
That's actually been one of the biggest stories in the news, with LeVar Ball not saying thank you to President Trump for getting his son released from prison over there in China. And I saw that it was a 23-minute interview that he had with CNN, and the whole thing was just hilarious. But he wouldn't say thank you to the president, but at least he did wish him a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, that's nice. That's something.
I thought he was actually very civil the whole time. He just didn't know what it involved over there in China, and so he just didn't bother to say thank you, but it didn't really upset me that much.
The gratitude gap, and he's part of it. Yeah. Some of the details of this survey says almost half of people express gratitude on a daily basis to immediate family, spouses, children, parents. Though elsewhere in the survey, 63% indicated daily gratitude expression to spouses, and less than 15% expressed daily gratitude to friends or colleagues. So, again, some people probably just more in the habit of it than others. Bosses regrettably replaced the category of never being thanked by 35% of those polled, which I guess I could understand that. Maybe, I don't know. Do you say thanks to your boss very often? I'm trying to think. Well, some people don't, you know, I don't know. Maybe they just don't like their bosses or something. But that's interesting. You'd think you'd want to be show a little more gratitude because they're in a position to maybe give you something or take something away. But it's interesting.
Yeah, it's the reason a lot of people get paid. So you would think that they would be thankful. I thank my boss a lot, but it's sort of known to be a way of getting him to like me. So both of us know that that's what's going on. And it's just kind of a running joke.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, that's true. I mean, a person could get to the over gratitude. That would be a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think we know that I do actually have gratitude toward him, mm-hmm. but we just take it a little to the extreme sometimes.
Just for the fun of it. It says, asked about everyday encounters, less than 50% said they would be very likely to thank salespeople that help them, as well as the postman, the cleaning staff, etc. I think out of habit, I probably say thank you. I don't really make a big deal out of it, but if somebody helps me, I usually say thanks. But I will say, I have noticed, and this happened a while ago, we went to a shopping center, and it was a younger person working behind the counter, and we needed to find a particular item in the store, so we went up and said, oh, excuse me, could you tell us where this is? They didn't even bother to look up from their whatever they were doing. They just kind of mumbled and pointed. And I didn't feel the need to thank that person as much. I was really surprised by it. I think they were actually working. It was a service desk, and your whole job is, you know, to serve other people. And it was a younger person, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I guess they just don't care about their job. But how hard would it be to just look up at the person and just give us the information? You know, we weren't asking for like a detailed map. We just wanted some human interaction. And I wonder if we're sort of losing that skill in society because we're so used to maybe just communication via text or, you know, something or being involved in screens. This individual was just staring at a screen doing something and didn't even look up to acknowledge our presence. I wonder if we're sort of losing that ability to communicate with other human beings, and that would factor into gratitude as well.
And another thing that we're losing is just the sense of responsibility that we have on our jobs. A lot of the time it's considered okay to just do the absolute minimum. And that's, I think, a lot of the reason why people don't say thank you as much to people who help them as part of their job. We might think, oh, well, that's supposed to be their job anyway. But whenever we see someone like you said, who isn't even looking up from a screen to help, when someone actually does bother to do the job well and make it a pleasant customer experience, that's definitely worth saying thank you for, because it's not a given anymore. It's not a mindset of service that we see from a lot of industries. I can't even count the number of times I've gone to like a restaurant, for example, and it's at least 30 or 40 minutes before closing time and they don't let you come in. And it's just because they want to get out of there early, even though the sign on their door says that they're open much longer than that. And so that's just kind of an example of how service isn't necessarily a given at a lot of these jobs anymore. When we do see it, it's definitely worth thanking, I would think.
Yeah, and that's a great point for people that maybe work in some of those jobs, you know, especially if you're, say, younger and you're starting out and you think, well, this isn't a great job or whatever. But if you show just some really basic, what used to be basic skills in terms of being kind to people, looking at people, you really stand out and probably do quite well, because it is getting to be more and more rare for that to happen. It is interesting, too. They say that people often express gratitude more towards children than they do to adults. But that's sort of, I think, normal in the sense that people are usually kind to children. But we're not usually kind to adults in the same way. You know, we'll walk up to a little kid and be like, oh, look at you, you know, and start, you know, talking about something. But obviously you wouldn't do that to an adult because it would be bizarre. But still, we're more guarded, which is probably, I don't know, it's probably normal in some ways. But there is a big gap between the way we would treat a child and another maybe adult. Mm-hmm. Which probably is sad in some ways.
Yeah, I think we like to go overboard with thanking children, even if they haven't necessarily done anything, just because they're fun to be around. And so we try to really be kind to them. And, of course, kids have an innocence about them that most adults do not. And so we feel a little bit more comfortable around them as well, I think. And that probably makes a difference. But I think even like some of the examples we've talked about, going into a business and interacting with someone at their job, it makes a big difference, even as the customer, to just look them in the eye, smile, and say thank you. And you can actually tell that sometimes their service improves a lot just by showing them that you're grateful for them doing their job well. And a lot of people I don't see do that. It's almost like they're making a demand, like, go get me my water and that type of thing. And you could see why some of those people might end up being a little bit miserable by the time they come around to serve you if they're dealing with all these hostile customers.
Yeah, it's a two-way street. It's a good point. You know, another area where often you don't, well, sometimes you see gratitude and it's really nice and sometimes you don't, is when people crossing the street and, you know, it might be a crosswalk or an area where they can cross, but you do have to kind of look and see if the traffic's coming. And so I try to make it a habit to look because sometimes people don't stop. And then if somebody does stop for you, you know, give them a little wave and then hustle across the street as much as I can. And some people do that, and I always appreciate it as a driver. But then there are times where people just, same sort of thing, they're plugged into their device or whatever. They're going to walk at their pace. They're not going to look for cars. And then when somebody does stop, no acknowledgement, slow as a snail. I'm like, you know, you got to be careful because somebody might not be paying attention, and that could be a problem there. But I think it shows a sort of a mentality as well.
I totally agree with you on that issue. It does make you happy as a driver to see people actually being grateful, because there are times too when maybe the passenger doesn't even have the right of way,
yeah,
but you might stop anyway just because you see that they might not be paying attention like they should, or maybe they seem like they're in a rush and you don't want to get in their way either. So sometimes the driver is inconveniencing himself to let someone cross the street, and that should be acknowledged. And another similar scenario would be if someone's trying to merge onto the highway and there's like a traffic slowdown, why not just let a car in front of you? You're not hardly moving anyway, and so it's not too difficult to let someone come in. You know, what you see a lot of the time is like all the cars are bumper to bumper, and they know that there's people trying to get in as well, and they're just waiting their turn, but their turn hardly ever comes because people are not slowing down to leave a little bit of space between vehicles.
Yeah, an attitude of gratitude. That's an interesting rhyme. But it does not only make probably our lives happier when we have more gratitude, but it just makes the whole society run better and things. And I've thought of that with traffic. When it gets to be a traffic jam, if everyone gave just a car length, which I don't do because somebody will take it, but if we all did just kind of relax a little bit and let everybody, you know, move around as needed, we probably would all move faster.
True.
You know, and I think there's just something to be said for just that sort of thinking in general. Like, if we're all in a hurry to get somewhere, we're all going to actually be slowed down. But if we all kind of gave each other the benefit of the doubt and try to let the other go, we'd probably all get there faster, whether it's traffic or just anything in life.
Yeah, we do live in a pretty greedy society where people might start out life with some pretty nice intentions, but then they realize that they start getting taken advantage of, and then people are jaded because of that, and then don't show the type of gratitude or the hospitality that they should. And it just seems to pass around. That type of attitude spreads when you know that people don't care about your well-being just because you've never met before, and they just want to get the best for themselves and get out.
Right. And then then you start to feel like, well, I got to take what I want, or else I'm never going to get it. And then everyone's trying to take. It's a bad thing. Business Insider did a interesting look at, or they wrote about an interesting look into what are Americans thankful for. Over the last few months, it says you may have seen your friends on Facebook posting lists of things for which they are thankful for or grateful for. You may have even participated. I'm not on Facebook, so I did not. The analytics team at Facebook recently looked at those posts to see what people around the U.S. are most thankful for. They came up with some pretty interesting trends and fascinating maps showing the most distinctive topics by state. One note is that over 90% of the people that responded are women. So this is probably a look at what women are thankful for. And apparently they're thankful for Facebook. So anyway, it's kind of interesting. Overall, people are most thankful for family health and their jobs, which I think is understandable. But then it broke it down by state. So here's what each state is the most thankful for. And we won't do all of them, but we'll pick a few. Well, we'll start here in Oklahoma. Oklahomans are thankful for work ethic. So that's pretty good. People in Minnesota are thankful for fall, and I assume they mean autumn.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, interesting. People in Oregon are thankful for yoga.
That makes sense.
Washington State, they're thankful for the ability to love. Nevada is thankful for country music.
Nice.
And Californians are thankful for YouTube.
Okay.
So it's interesting, you know, you have some pretty epic ones, like the ability to love, and then you have YouTube. I don't know if one's more honest than the other, or if that's the way people really feel.
It's kind of funny. Those three West Coast ones are like kind of fitting in line with what I already thought. So, yeah, I mean, different states have different reputations, I guess. Oklahoma definitely does prize working hard and finishing what you start and being courteous to other people, being giving. So I could see why they would put work ethic in there.
Yeah, several states are thankful for thunderstorms, which is interesting. Iowa is thankful for sunsets, which is interesting. Michigan's thankful for electricity. That's a good one. There's a few states that are thankful for YouTube and a few that are thankful for country music, as mentioned. People in Florida are thankful for living near the beach, which it's a nice place to live. Texas is thankful for the rain, which is good, but of course too much rain's bad, as Houston knows. And the couple of the states down around the Florida area there in the southeastern United States are thankful for God's forgiveness, mercy, God's word, and God's love. So that's interesting. I guess that's a really, I thought we were in the Bible Belt here, but that seems like that's the Bible Belt over there.
Yeah, and that does fit the stereotype of the Southern preacher and the very religious deep South. So you could understand why they would be extremely grateful for God's great traits, like we all should be. I mean, that probably should have made every state's list.
Mm-hmm. And Alaska is thankful for children's laughter. Hawaii is thankful for rainbows. So
nice.
Those are some of the, and there's some other ones like the ability to laugh, apartments. I don't know why that one would be. That's kind of interesting. Like I mentioned, a few had YouTube and some other technological advances like Google. Kansas likes Google. So anyway, kind of interesting to look at what different states are thankful for here in the United States. Lifehack had a list of things that we should be thankful for. Some are pretty obvious, but some are kind of interesting. I thought it'd be interesting to look at. They say one thing you should be thankful for is learning from mistakes. If we never made mistakes, we wouldn't learn much. So it is one of those things we should be thankful for.
Yeah, I like that one. The mistakes sometimes can be extremely painful if we don't learn from the mistakes made by those around us or those who are famous. And hopefully we can avoid making those same mistakes if we're being observant enough.
I like the fact that they said learning from mistakes instead of just mistakes. You know, we don't want to make mistakes, but learning from them is good. They also say we should be thankful for the opportunity to get an education. The opportunity to attend school is something many people don't have, and that's something that we can take for granted here in the U.S. You know, kids are always like, oh, we got to go to school, you know. But a lot of kids can't go to school around the world. And even in the U.S., of course, it varies. I mean, some school systems are pretty rough and some are better than others, but just the opportunity to go and get an education probably is taken for granted by quite a few, I would think, in the U.S., in the West.
Yeah, and that educational opportunity has has become more widespread, even just in America, because it used to be pretty common for children to be pulled out of school in fifth or sixth grade to have to go work on the farm or to help work in their parents' diner or whatever it was. Now that's a lot less common. I guess people are a lot more strict about children working these days, so that makes a difference. But it does also ensure that people go all the way through high school in most cases, or even get a chance to go to college. Like you say, some of the schools are not the best, but at least you're being educated, or at least learning how to educate yourself. Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong always said that most people probably wouldn't do much to educate themselves outside of an established school system. So where would we be if we weren't forced to go to school for a long time until we learned to like it?
Yeah, a lot of it would depend on the situation you grew up in, like if your parents knew enough to teach you something, or, you know, if they didn't. Another thing to be thankful for is the ability to read. They say if you're reading this right now, you have a lot to be thankful for. There are a lot of people that don't know how to read. Even in, I don't know what the numbers are in the U.S., but there are people that can't read. And I sometimes think about that. You know, we need to read, obviously, just to survive every day. And it would be just a really a sort of a panicked feeling to, say, walk through an airport or, you know, look at a map or anything that you need to do to kind of get around in life and not know what those signs say or, you know, just basic things that we'd have to look at. You'd feel really closed off from the world and very isolated.
Yeah, and even in a more serious way, it does make it easy to be deceived. There are a lot of, I guess, movements out there that run on deception, especially now in this country. And so if you're not informed, if you're not reading the news a lot, if you don't have like a basic level of understanding of some of the issues, it can be pretty easy to be brainwashed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing to be thankful for, this is one that we probably wouldn't think of, but they say we should be thankful for pain. Without pain, it would be difficult to appreciate life's joys. And of course, nobody wants pain. But, you know, just the basic pain that our bodies are equipped with in terms of, you know, if we were to injure ourselves, we'd feel the pain. That is something to be thankful for because there are people that don't have that. And that sounds great, except you hurt yourself all the time. Like you have no idea to stop doing something because you don't feel the pain. So nobody likes pain, but at the same time, it does have benefits.
Yeah, pain is just the body's signal to get away from the things that are hurting us. And so that does help a lot. Instead of putting our hand on the stove and letting it sit there while it's on, and we didn't even know it because we couldn't tell, and then our hand just burns off. I mean, you know to get away from it in a split second. A lot of people who are paralyzed, they don't know like the pain that they're or the harm that they're putting themselves through because they can't feel it. Even just like the pain of overeating, they might not even have that because there's no feeling in their gut to tell them that they're full. And so they could even threaten their own lives by extremely overeating. Even things as simple as that just show the value of pain. It makes us aware of the things that are threatening us.
Yeah, I mean, if you just stop and think about very common everyday activities that you feel a little pain and you stop, hot water coming out of a sink, you're like, oh, yeah. You know, if you didn't feel that, you get your hand burned. And so it is something none of us like, but I think it's just interesting to think about something like that, where there's so many things in life you can think about, even things that maybe we don't like, but there is something to be thankful for there. And so it's interesting to look at that. A few other things they said to be thankful for, of course, is our minds that we can think and reason and those things. We're not trees. Waking up today, it's always something to be thankful for. Indoor plumbing. Very yeah, if you don't have it, boy, you'd certainly miss it. The ability to learn, people willing to teach, warm clothing when it's cold outside. I've thought about that before. You think, if I didn't have a home to go to tonight and I didn't have a, you know, coat, like how long would I last, you know, when it's the wintertime? And it's just a normal day and things go on. But if you didn't have those basic necessities, you may not survive the night. It's kind of a strange thought.
Yeah, and that actually does come up. That idea comes up a lot in world news. Like it seems like every winter, European countries are worried about Russia cutting off the gas flow and taking away the heat from their homes because the winter is very cold. When you're not sure if you're going to have that type of amenity in your life, if you don't have the clothing to stay warm, I mean, everything gets more inconvenient, and it's almost like every day is full of a lot more suffering just because you don't have the normal things that most people have.
Yeah, for sure. I was wishing I had worn some gloves this morning. I came in early and my hands were cold. Where are my gloves? Finally, they say challenges is something to be thankful for. Without challenges in life, we wouldn't be the people we are now.
Life's more exciting because of challenges, especially when you keep adding challenges to your life to keep the routine from getting too boring.
Yeah, you. Speaking of challenges, last year it was, right? You were telling me that you did this this workout, this extreme workout. It was kind of for fun. And it was this time of year, right? Mm-hmm. And then...
it was a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done it too recently, but it was
at midnight. Like, that's part of the deal. You have to do it at midnight. And you accomplished it, but... You got a little sick from it.
Yeah, I did vomit a couple of times and was probably one of the slower ones doing the workout. But it was all men doing it, and it was a bonding experience. You had to do like, I think you had to do a mile run, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 squats, and then another mile run. So actually, I didn't even think it sounded too hard. The pull-ups are pretty difficult, especially when you're a bigger guy, to pull yourself up 100 times. But it didn't sound as bad as it was, and then it ended up being very difficult.
Yeah, but you completed it, which is pretty amazing. And I don't know, I've never gotten to the point of like getting sick. Like I've gotten to the point of not feeling well, but it's never gone that far. I don't know what I would do. Like, but you push through, so that's pretty admirable.
It's kind of tough not to push through when there's a bunch of other guys around and you don't want to wimp out in front of all them. Otherwise, if I were by myself, I probably would have just stopped short of vomiting.
Positive peer pressure. Yeah. I think that's positive peer pressure.
Probably. I did go to bed really excited knowing that I had done it.
Yeah.
I went to bed at like 2 in the morning because that's part of it, the extreme of doing it in the middle of the night and doing something really hard like that. It's like the typical manly challenge, basically.
And were you pretty sore the next day?
Not really. I mean, I think I was sore a few days later, but mainly it was a feeling of accomplishment. Every time I felt a little bit of pain, I was proud of myself.
It's always interesting when you do something, a workout, and that's a pretty tough one, obviously. But if you work out a little bit, sometimes you can be a little disappointed that you don't have like immediate epic results physically. But then I always have to stop and think about the other side of it. You know, I'm like, well, if I ate a cheeseburger, though, like, I don't want it to be an immediate drastic result. Like, it goes both ways. We all want the immediate positive result. And then if we maybe eat something that's not as good or something like that, we can say, well, it's just once in a while. We don't want it to affect us in any way, but we want to do 10 push-ups and have it, you know, revolutionize our lives.
Yeah, that is a big part of why it's so difficult to work out consistently or do anything that would help your health consistently, because it does take a while to start seeing it work. I think probably right away you do start to feel a little bit better, at least just from doing something, but you don't see it in the mirror for quite a while.
Yeah, it's so that's something to be there's probably something to be thankful for there, but I'm off to think about what it is. Lots of things to be thankful for. Also, I'm sure you have your own list of things it's good to think about on Thanksgiving. And all the time, too. It's just a good attitude to have. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. The top story is Americans are still paying the bill from the 2016 holidays. That's not something to be thankful for. According to the report, most Americans are planning on spending about the same amount on some of their Christmas gifts and holiday shopping as they did last year, average of about $660. For some, this will only add to the debt that they are still paying off from last year. Getting into more debt, of course, when you are already in debt is not a sustainable way of living. Eventually, the bottom falls out on that. So, a lot of pressure on people. Maybe just don't do it.
That is crazy. I never thought of it taking a whole year or more to pay off just the holiday debts that people accrue. But I guess that's the danger of credit, especially the longer you go without paying it on time. I believe in a lot of cases the interest rate goes up to like 30, 40, 50%. So even if you do start paying it off at that point, the amount that you have to pay in total is just growing. And it's almost just overwhelming, I'm sure, to have to deal with a burden like that. And to know that you're about to do it all over again at this time of year again, I mean, that alone shows you that there are some things wrong with Christmas, just if you look at the financial aspect.
Yeah, and then what's happening is, of course, there's a lot of sort of band-aids out there that make it seem like you're getting a hold of your debt. You know, well, transfer it to a zero interest credit card. They'll give you a zero interest on it, you know, for 18 months, and then it'll kick back up, and which isn't a bad idea if you pay it off in 18 months.
Right.
I mean, usually you have got to pay a little percentage to get that deal. You know, they make their money on you one way or the other. But I think the problem is people feel better. Like, oh, well, I'm not paying interest on it, so what difference does it make? And then it's easy to load up another one and just kind of keep the cycle going. And so, but eventually the bills come due and you got to pay them.
And the hard part about that, if you're serious about just eliminating all debt, you have to make some pretty serious cutbacks in other areas of your life, get rid of a lot of luxuries or amenities that maybe you just can't sustain at that time. That's what's really difficult. I think a lot of us do have extra money, but we do like to have a few nice things in our lives. When you're in debt, it's hard to justify having those nice things anymore.
Well, and two, just, you know, in thinking about the idea of Thanksgiving and being thankful, is that plenty of studies have shown that people really, it's hard to be thankful for something when you've got too much. And you just have a very, there are cases where people would go in debt on needs, but in a lot of cases it's just stuff that they probably don't need. And, but even there, you're not happy with it, you know, because it's not, it's just the, something about the way our minds work, you know, when we start coveting and wanting things, we're not even happy with what we have. And, you know, the next thing, that'll make us happy. Yeah, but it doesn't really make us happy. But if you just keep with what you can afford, you actually really appreciate the item more, you know, than if you're just constantly getting something new and something new and something new. Because what I think you really are addicted to at that point is the excitement of getting something new. And you don't even appreciate. I mean, how many times have you seen it on maybe a TV show or whatever, or maybe even personal experience where you get some things and you think it's going to make you happy, and then, you know, 6 months later they're still sitting in a box because you never do anything with it. That's common, I think.
Yeah, it is. And what about the value of saving for some nice things? Even if we do get nice things, it sometimes takes a long time to save up for it. But once you buy it, you know it's totally yours. You don't have to make payments on it anymore. You know that you exercise discipline and self-control, and you built up and achieved your goal of buying whatever that thing is. That's the way to do it in almost every case. I'm not saying I've always done that, but definitely I enjoy whatever the item is if I have done it the right way and paid for it all at once.
Yeah, I think Herbert Armstrong had just a really great kind of a rule for that, rule of thumb, which was, you know, buy the best you can afford. Nothing wrong with getting quality and items, but it has to be what you can afford. And then you can enjoy it. You know, it's like anything in life. I mean, if you, say, saved up and bought a nice dining room table, you can probably have that for the next 30 years. Like, how many dining room tables do you need? But there are a lot of items where it's easy to just get another one, and you probably don't even need it.
Yeah, it seems like we might have even changed the definition of the word afford. When Mr. Armstrong says, buy the best you can afford, we might have expanded that to mean that, oh, what is a sustainable amount of debt that we can eventually pay off? He literally meant the money that you actually have, not the type of payment that you could then sustain every single month. So that is something to keep in mind. It's talking about buying things in cash, and that's even encouraged by a lot of financial gurus such as Dave Ramsey. Like, if you go into a car dealership and you have $10,000 or $15,000 in cash, you're probably pretty likely to walk away with a deal right there, even if that's less than the actual amount of the car, because paying for it right away means that the salesperson gets that money right away as well.
Yeah, it's cash is king, as they say. That's a really good point. You know, what we can afford, you know, we've kind of been tricked or knowingly deceived, but there's a lot of trickery involved too, and you can afford the payment,
right?
But you really can't afford the item right now. And so there's a lot to think about there. But anyway, that write-up's at thetrumpet.com. Americans are still paying the bill from the 2016 holidays. Also, stop and listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, coming up here in just a bit. All of the programming, of course, archived online at kpcg.fm, and you can find it at thetrumpet.com as well. Some Thanksgiving history. This is always sort of interesting to look at. 1621, the Plymouth colonists and the Wampanoag Indians shared an autumn harvest feast that is acknowledged today as one of the first Thanksgiving celebrations in the colonies. For more than two centuries, days of Thanksgiving were celebrated by individual colonies and states. It wasn't until 1863, in the midst of the Civil War, that President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed a national Thanksgiving Day to be held each November. And so that's there's a kind of a dual history there with some of the original Thanksgiving celebrations as far as the colonies are concerned, and then President Lincoln during the Civil War.
Yeah, and what a day with so much rich history as well, and a day of people coming together, like you said, with the pilgrims and the Indians getting together like they did, and having, I mean, imagine that, two groups of people that different today getting together in America. You don't see it very much because we're so divided and there's so much hatred being spewed, but they came from completely different backgrounds. Most of them didn't even speak the same language or have the same type of environment that they grew up in. And yet here they were putting all that aside just to have a feast together and to try to build friendships. And I think that's a lot of what Thanksgiving is about. Obviously, there's the deeper spiritual context of trying to show thanks toward God, our creator. But even just looking at examples like that of the foundation of the country and the pilgrims coming over here, it is something we could probably learn a lot from and be corrected by, just the way that they did have unity with people who were very different from them.
Yeah, and history records that the pilgrims and the Indians there had about a 50-year peace. That was pretty good until inevitably there were some problems. They don't know exactly what they ate, but according to Edward Winslow, he wrote in his journal that they went on a fowling mission to find some fowl in preparation for the event, and that the Wampanoag guests arrived bearing five deer. Historians have suggested that many of the dishes were likely prepared using traditional Native American spices and cooking methods. Obviously, the pilgrims had no oven, and the Mayflower sugar supply had dwindled by the fall of 1621, so they don't believe that the meal featured any pies, cakes, or desserts.
A bummer.
So they probably didn't quite have the carbohydrate feast in terms of the pies that we may have today, but well, that's okay. I think we can have a few pies.
Yeah, it did seem like all parties involved there did make a pretty big contribution to the feast, and obviously they were thankful for each other's company. And I just think it is a really great example and something to think about whenever we go into Thanksgiving this year. And like you said, there was about a 50-year peace. The way people would teach it today is that it was all the white man's fault for the issues that they had, when really there was blame on both sides. And I guess the big disagreement seemed like the fact that they didn't desire to come together as one nation. The white man had his idea for setting up a religious nation, America. The Indians wanted to stay in their own separate tribes. So obviously that's a little bit more difficult. But today we're all supposedly a part of America. It should be a lot easier to get along than it was back then.
And we see more and more division. A couple of interesting numbers you might find somewhat interesting. Americans eat an average of 13.3 pounds of turkey per year, probably all on Thanksgiving. I don't think we really eat turkey outside of that. 46 million turkeys are eaten at Thanksgiving, and nearly 88% of Americans eat turkey at Thanksgiving. So some people don't, but most do. They have, of course, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. There's usually about 3.5 million spectators, and about 50 million people watch that on television. I've never been a big parade individual, but it's just the same stuff like roaming by on the street. But some people love it, so I don't want to be negative about it, but it's never been my thing. But unfortunately, when I think about Thanksgiving these days, probably most people kind of jump right away to Black Friday, which is the big shopping day. And so obviously if you receive emails of any kind from anywhere, you've probably gotten about a million Black Friday emails so far and counting. So that's what a lot of people are interested in. And some even, you know, they'll camp out overnight to get into the stores.
Yeah, very true. And that is quite the disturbing phenomenon to see people doing that. And especially when you hear the stories every year of people getting trampled, you know, and people getting into brawls to get something that's like 5 or 10% off. Or I mean, I'm sure a lot of deals are better than that, but it doesn't seem like it's worth beating someone up over, especially when so many of the deals are available online too. You could just stay home and order it that day and probably avoid a lot of the stress, the physical injury, the sleepless nights, things like that.
In 2011, 226 million people went shopping on Black Friday, which is a good chunk of the U.S. population. Spending $52 billion, about $400 per person. Nearly 25% of Black Friday shoppers hit the stores by midnight that night, you know, Thanksgiving night into Friday. And then if that's not enough for you, well, hang around for Cyber Monday. So, but yeah, it's amazing. I think the shopping side of it has probably become as much of a tradition as say anything else that would have been more historically traditional in this country.
And we mentioned it earlier, it is just kind of a symbol of the greed in our society and how we're not really trying to focus on giving to other people, especially if we don't know them well. Then they have no importance to us, so we can take advantage of them however we want to. I mean, you see that human nature coming out on Black Friday every year. Why is it that people need to spend all night waiting out front of a store, or why is it that they need to fight over a jacket? You know, it's crazy. And imagine when it gets so bad in this country that people actually need those supplies. People don't need those things right now. Those are luxury items. Those are fun little gifts. They're getting a little bit of a discount, but it's not like it's the food that's going to feed their family for the next couple of weeks. The people are really going to beat each other up when it comes to that.
It's a great point. I mean, we'll all see the footage, I'm sure, because I show it every year of people rushing into the Black Friday sales and pushing each other over. And one thing you'll notice that I will predict is that people that are rushing in to get clothing items, none of them are naked.
Right.
You never see, like, naked people storming the store trying to get the jacket or the shoes.
Not too much desperation.
Because they've got a few, and I don't think it's their one outfit they're wearing. So we're usually pretty okay, like you say, but the hysteria to get something that's not even essential or needed is pretty remarkable. I mean, even there was a recent Time magazine I was looking at, and they had some photos in there of I don't remember what region it was, but somewhere where people really need help and they're really impoverished. And there was an aid truck that pulled up to give out supplies, and the people were, you know, crying and begging for the food. And they're all ragtag, you know, as far as what they're wearing. And you look at that. Now, those people actually, there's a reason for their sort of hysteria, because they need to eat. But we don't have any need for that here in this country.
Yeah, and it is sobering to think of other situations like that where people actually do have a desperate, dire need for supplies, and yet we respond the same way for a convenience item. I mean it does show how high our standard of living is, the fact that we don't have any desperation for our meals or for our living environment or for a vehicle or anything like that. Other nations have that kind of a desperation for things that are important. So that's something to think about and even be thankful for as well. I actually saw a clip from a comedian recently. He was saying Thanksgiving is his favorite holiday, but he hates the Black Friday part of it. And he actually recommended, if you're going to be crazy enough to go during the heat of the rush, the charge into the store at the time that the doors open, why not just wait back behind that initial throng of people? They're all going to trample each other and be on the ground, and then you can just, like, jump over the pile like Walter Payton.
Yeah.
like a running back, you know, jumping into the end zone.
Yeah.
And then you're probably in the clear.
That's right. That's right, because if you see all the football players chasing the football, what happens is they always pile on, and then it squirts out somewhere.
Right.
And you got to be in the right spot to get it, so... All the items, you know. I don't go out shopping on Black Friday, and I think one time I went out just to kind of see what it was, the hoopla.
Yeah.
And it was packed, and I just didn't like any of it. I have never seen a deal. I'm sure they're out there, but I've never seen anything where I'm like, what? You know, it's like a 20% off or something. Like, I don't care. I mean, that's every day.
Right.
I've never seen something that was so unbelievable that you just, you know, you're going to have to, you know, bolt that door or I'm coming through. Maybe they're out there somewhere and I just don't see it, but I don't see all the big sales people talk about.
Yeah, it's kind of like you see those sales and you say, oh, that's nice. That would be a nice little discount, but it's not like pull out my wallet right now and buy that thing on site. It's never that good. If you're talking like 70 or 80% off, that might get me to buy it on site. But other than that, I probably not.
Yeah. So anyway, it's... part of what happens here in the U.S. One thing that people are the most thankful for, at least as far as what they say, and I think probably accurate, is family. And we were talking this week about this great book, God is a Family. So thinking about being thankful for something, there's probably nothing to be more thankful for than this, the fact that God is a family, and that's something people don't discuss very much or understand. It's a great booklet. It's at thetrumpet.com. It's written by Stephen Fleury, host of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And really great read anytime, but particularly this time of the year, because people are thankful for family, but inevitably physical family gets old, people die. And and there's some sadness to that. But when you look at what man is for being born into God's family, there's nothing but joy and hope there, and really something to be thankful for.
That's absolutely right. And family is just the perfect support system, even just physically. And of course, it points to the spiritual family. But think of the way that we approach family today. It's almost like we've replaced family with the government. The government is supposed to support us. The government's supposed to pay us or give us different benefits. When if we do come from a strong family background, a lot of the time, if you're down on your luck, your parents could help you or your children could help you, depending on the situation. And it is almost like that is the real safety net, having a family around you to help you and to love you and to even give you a hand up if you are in need. And instead, our families have broken down and we've turned to the government. That's no coincidence. There's a reason. That was a strategy to break down families so that people would turn to the government and the people in charge of the government could take more power.
Yeah, and everybody does need help, like you say, at times from family. They need support. And ultimately, the God family is where that comes from. And so just a couple of notes here from this booklet as we wrap up today, some things to think about. It says, man's ultimate potential is to inherit all things, the entire universe. And we talked about that some yesterday, going through a few passages. It says, we will inherit all things when we are actually born into members of the God family. So if you think about the desire for physical possessions that are on display during this time of the year, it's so narrow-minded, because God says, look, you can have everything, but you know, you need to develop the character to where you can handle it properly. Because if you think about it, even physically, let's say people are going out there because they want the new tennis shoes or whatever. Well, how many do you want? You know, would you finally be happy if you had a mountain of tennis shoes? These are my shoes, you know. It, at the end, like people that actually do get kind of whatever they want in life, and there are some that get quite a bit, I think at the end they usually say, well, what's the point of all of this? You know, if I just hoarded a bunch of things to myself. And God wants to give us everything, but we have to have a mentality of wanting to then share it with other people, because that's where the fun is.
Yeah, that's right. And if you read the Bible throughout it, it compares God's truth and spiritual abundance to riches, to a treasure chest, to precious gems, things like that. And so that does show you the value that living the right way provides and the value that our future holds. It's so much more than, you know, a bedazzled pink scarf that you get on sale at some sort of store on Black Friday. There are so many more important things than that in life, yet we are so easily distracted on those little things.
Yeah, it points out here Hebrews 2 and verse 10, where it says, for it became him, Christ, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, and in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. And that means exactly what it says, that many sons unto glory. I mean, we've seen Christ be a human and then be born as a spirit-begotten son of God. Of course, he was the son of God as a human as well, but then actually become God as he was before he came to this earth. And so we've seen the process. It happens. And in this verse talks about bringing many sons into glory. There's a lot more to come. Although sometimes we go through sufferings and pain, and as we talked about earlier, sometimes pain's a thing to be thankful for, because we do have to learn some lessons sometimes. But the end is bringing all these sons onto glory, this whole huge family of God beings. That's something to really be thankful for and be excited about.
Yeah, and I think too often it's easy to say, well, what good is a future, a great future like it's described in the Bible, if I'm miserable in my physical life and I don't have a lot of nice possessions at this time? But, you know, what it's such a, I guess, an easy way to fall into that type of thinking. But when there's something so much greater in the future, you really do have to see beyond, I guess, just the physical things and understand that there is a future where you know exactly what you'll be doing for all eternity. A lot of time when we get to the end of our physical lives, we think, well, what's next? And there's almost like a panic for a lot of people. They don't know if there's heaven or hell or if there's even an afterlife at all. And yet the Bible explains that very clearly, that there's something absolutely marvelous, way beyond anything that you could achieve in this life. And so even from that standpoint, at least we would have security in our future. And that's a big thing as well.
Yeah, the booklet, again, this is God as a Family. It's a great little booklet to get at thetrumpet.com, proving that God is a family. It wraps up this part of the section talking about Romans 8:17, where it says, "And if children, then heirs," and I think we know what heirs means. It means you can inherit. "Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If so be that we suffer with him, we may be also glorified together." So think about that. I mean, if we are a joint heir with Christ, what did Christ get? What did he receive? You can look at many passages and find out a lot of details about that, a lot of the very specific rewards. And here it says we're joint heirs with Christ. And so that's something to really stop and meditate on, like you pointed out. I mean, there's plenty of times in life where, you know, maybe we don't have all the things we'd want, or maybe we're having a hard time or a trial. But if you look at the future, for those that are going to obey God and follow his truth and have their minds open to it at this time, you know, the future is, and ultimately for all mankind that choose it, to be joint heirs with Christ. That's a pretty good deal, to say the least. And to really stop and just spend some time thinking about that. We'd all love to hear from a super rich relative and say, you know what, you're actually an heir to my estate. Well, we're heirs to the universe. That's what God says.
Yeah, the parallel there is pretty clear, and it is spectacular. And it is all wrapped up in family, as that God is a Family booklet shows. It's not just we'll be heirs, but it's like that verse brought out as well, sons of God and marrying Jesus Christ if we're following him in this physical life. And even for those who aren't, they'll have a chance to also become sons of God in the future. So that is a family structure. That's a reason why our physical family should be right today, because of what it pictures, what it points to. It is an exact type of what we'll be experiencing in the spiritual family for all eternity.
Yeah, a lot to be thankful for there. Most importantly, the fact that God is a family and all people have a chance to be part of that. Really check this book out if you get a chance to. God is a Family. It's at thetrumpet.com, and of course, it's free. Thanks for joining us here today on Trumpet Radio Live. It's all the time we have. Enjoy the rest of this day, and thanks for spending some of today with us. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here with me as well. We appreciate being with you today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.